From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for kicking off your week with us. This is your Monday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That account is where we post all of our new content, podcasts, articles, polls, news and notes, blurbs. Everything gets shared out there, ETHOS FantasyBB. So hit us with a follow. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, you can check it all out at SportsEthos.com. Guys, we're going to spend today's show going through the weekend, talking about some of the big things that happened and also getting into the most added and dropped players of the day. Pretty standard stuff. I do want to start off by talking about Ronald Blanco. This one was a major topic of conversation on my Twitter. I had a take that people were not exactly big fans of, so let's get into it. Ronald Blanco, before his start on Saturday, this is in the morning on Saturday, I tweeted out a comparison between his stats and what we're seeing so far out of Garrett Crochet. So far, I mean, Crochet on the surface has not been nearly as good, but if you dig a little bit deeper, I think he's clearly the better pitcher. He's not been getting nearly the same kind of luck that Blanco has, and we'll get into that in a second. But I essentially was just saying, you know, Blanco's 88% rostered, Crochet's 52% rostered. I think that these should be kind of reversed. You know, I think the Crochet should be closer to 90, and Blanco is more of like a 50-50 guy. I also said in one of the comments that Blanco is one of the more fraudulent 90% plus rostered pitchers that I can remember seeing. I just truly don't think that he is that great. And then, of course, he has a fantastic start in Mexico where everybody was expecting massive, massive run environments and tons of runs to be scored all over the place. We kind of got that, but let's dig into the Mexico series first and talk about what we saw there. So, Ronald Blanco, 5 2/3 in his start, 2 earned runs, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks. He was fantastic. On the other side of that, Cal Quantrill was about what you'd expect from Cal Quantrill, especially in an environment where there's going to be more balls flying out of the yard. He allowed 6 earned runs, 2 strikeouts, a couple homers, a couple of walks. Not great stuff from him. We jump forward to the Sunday game. And if you look at what happened there, it was an 8-2 Astros victory. They got a good start out of Framber Valdez, and it was a bad start out of Austin Gomber and the Rockies' pen. So essentially in this series, we saw the Rockies pitchers do exactly what we were expecting out of them, and we saw the Astros pitchers perform pretty well. I don't think that there's anything really to be said about like the environment in Mexico, because while it was a little bit more hitter-friendly, it wasn't crazy. We weren't like last year, we saw like a 17-11 game or whatever it was. We weren't really seeing that. Like, yeah, the Astros were scoring more runs. They scored 20 runs in 2 games, but they're an incredibly powerful offense. Alvarez hit a couple home runs. Altuve was cooking. So nothing really surprising there. On the other side, people started dragging me because Ronald Blanco did very well in this game, and credit to him, he had a fantastic start on Saturday. But we're also talking about this Rockies team that is awful. It's an awful, awful team. So while yes, it's good that he got through them, and he's got through tough teams as well. Not to take anything away from him, but the victory laps I saw after Ronald Blanco gets through a lineup that features the likes of Elijah Montero and Brendan Rodgers and Hunter Goodman, and you know Brenton Doyle batting second, as good as he's been, like it's not a good lineup. It's really not a good lineup. So yes, he got through them. I think people are reading a little bit too much into that, though. And now we get into the whole line itself. Blanco has a 1.65 ERA through the first 32 and two-thirds innings this year, five starts for him. That's incredible. Like, there's nothing I can say that's going to take away what he's given you over this first month of the season. He's been amazing. But if you look at the strikeout rate, 23.4%, he's now just got that into the acceptable range. It had been 20-21%. Generally, in the minor leagues, he'd been a guy with pretty good strikeout rates. It did fluctuate a little bit depending on what level he was at. Generally, I think he can be about an average strikeout rate guy, maybe slightly below average to average type, you know, 20 to 23% type of range. But the walks are something I think is still a big problem. He's still walking 11% of batters. It's never been something that he's had a good command of, his repertoire, essentially. Walks galore at all levels of the minors going back to rookie ball in 2016. Always walking 8, 10, 12, 15% of batters. Not quite 15, but getting up to 13.6%. I don't think the command is there. I don't know if it's ever going to be there. I talk a lot about numbers that predict ERA, ERA estimators, the FIPs, the ex-FIPs of the world. His xERA, which, you know, again, this is not me being selective. If you listen to the show regularly, you know that xERA is not something that I generally use, but his xERA is very good, 232. His ex-FIP is 428, and his Sierra currently sits at 424. I don't think that he is that great. I think that he's had a really lucky run of it. He's allowed a 173 BABIP. He's allowed a 0.5 homer per nine, and he's stranded 88% of base runners. None of those things are going to stick. He's going to probably strand somewhere roughly in the league average, 70-ish percent. He's generally been about that range for his career in the minors, and actually generally a little bit lower than 70% even. So there's no way we're expecting him to strand about 90% of runners going forward. Allowing a 173 BABIP is not sustainable. It's not sustainable if you're Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez in your prime. Nobody's going to do that, let alone Ronel Blanco, who, again, I don't want to take away what he's done, but he's 30 years old. He'd never really pitched in the majors before this year, and I think there's a reason for that. I don't think that he's that great. I think he's had a really excellent run, and I think at this point now, you can actually truly capitalize on it. I tweeted out a few weeks ago after the second start that he had that was nearly a no-hitter that this was one of the biggest, you know, sell highs that I can remember. Now you're at a point where you can actually probably trick some people, and that's, you don't want to trick people necessarily, but I mean, this is kind of what's happening with Ronel Blanco. Just go check the replies. I was getting quote tweeted all over the place. People were saying Ronel Blanco is a stud, and there were literally people who were saying bookmark this for when he wins the Cy Young and all this crazy stuff. If people are thinking that about Ronel Blanco, then by all means, you can probably get yourself a second or third rounder. Not in most leagues, but in some leagues, and I mean in all leagues at this point, there will be one person who would be willing to buy in on Blanco. I'm not sure what the price would be, but you can probably get yourself back something really, really nice for him. A top 25 SP, a top 30 SP potentially. I know it sounds crazy, but I've seen some people rank him fairly aggressively into the 40s. The way that he's and that was before the Mexico series. I haven't looked at anybody's SP rankings in about a week now, but he was into the 40s, early, mid-40s, I think, for certain people. I just don't think that he's going to be able to skate by with these kind of metrics all season long. The StatCast data looks pretty good. That stuff I don't want to read too much into in a very small sample size, because a lot of people were coming back with the StatCast data and saying, look at what he's doing, look at the hard hits and this and that and the other. I mean, you can start to take a look at it. There's nothing that you should absolutely ignore, regardless of sample size. You can always take a look to some extent as long as you have the proper context, but the expected batting average being what it is, 95th percentile, the exit velocity being what it is, the barrel rate being almost non-existent, I just think this is a lucky stretch. Hard hit rate as well, only 25%. I just don't think this is a true telling of who he is. And the prudent move would likely be to sell, because it's not going to be like this all year long. I'd bet my life on it that at some point he's going to come crashing back down to earth. And especially for you guys in roto leagues, that 165, I mean, if you've got this banked in head-to-head, you've probably won a couple weeks at this point because of Blanco. In those roto leagues, there's going to be a couple of really ugly starts. Just think back to Bryce Elder from last year. That's the best comp I can make. It was really good until it wasn't good, and then it was terrible. Bryce Elder was skating by for about the first 3 months of the season, roughly until the All-Star break, and he was just outperforming, outshooting his advanced metrics to a kind of a drastic extent, which is what we've seen with Blanco. Now, he's closed the gap a little bit in terms of like the ERA to XFIP to Sierra numbers, But it's still not a situation where I'd be confident saying Blanco is a rest of season asset. You're getting 30 starts out of him. You're getting a sub-3 ERA. I'm never going to be at that point with him. I just don't think the skills are that great. If I'm wrong, I'm willing to eat that, and I'm not somebody who will shy away from taking L's. There are definitely L's. I was a huge fader of Ellie De La Cruz, and I've talked about that. There are L's that I will take that will be public about. And if this is one, then I will eat it. But at this point in time, I think that Ronel Blanco is a massive sell high where you can get yourself something really nice considering he plays for Houston, who I know they haven't been great, but I think people generally do recognize that Houston will be better than this. Decent team context, especially in that division. I just don't think that this is an accurate reflection of the American League West, what we're seeing at this point. I think people generally are still kind of in on the Astros to some extent, maybe not as much as they were in previous years, but I think people generally understand it's going to get better. They're not going to be outpaced by the Athletics and the Angels for very long. So between the team context, between what he's actually done on the field here, a sub-1 whip, 165 ERA, I think that you could be selling him and getting yourself back something pretty, pretty nice in return. But let's move on and let's talk about what happened, the major notes from Sunday's games. And let's start with Eric Fetty. Eric Fetty had another fantastic start. This one came against the Rays. 8 innings, he allowed 1 run, 9 strikeouts, did not walk a batter. 28% CSW and a 13% swinging strike rate. He lowered his ERA down to 2.36 and his whip is now at 1.02. 39 strikeouts and 9 walks through his 6 starts and 34 and a third innings pitched. I picked him up in several leagues. I picked him up in TGFBI, in my home league, and a couple other places. I don't know necessarily if this is going to be legit or not, but I think it's worth finding out. It's worth taking a chance on him, especially because he's not somebody that was generally that expensive. I did pay up a little bit in TGFBI. I paid about 10%, 11% of my FAB budget because I've been doing very well. That team is second place in the league. It's a top 50 team overall, and I had a lot of money to spend. I'd only spent about 17 FAB dollars this year. The team I just, that was the best team I drafted this year probably, and I didn't need to make a lot of adjustments. So sitting there with a lot of money, I see Fetty doing very well for himself. I bid, I think, 112 on him, 112, 114 or something, and I got him. The runner-up bid was 88, 90, something in that range. So not an egregious overpay. I'm not 100% sure what this is going to look like going forward, but he was excellent, excellent last year in Korea. So far, like I said, a 2.60 ERA. We have a 3.34 xFIP, which is a very nice number there, and a 3.25 Sierra. 21.1 strikeout minus walk rate. The numbers are suggesting that it's going to be a really nice run for Eric Fetty. I don't know if this is something that we'll be able to see sustain the entire year with this type of value. He will suffer in the win column. We know this. The White Sox are going to be bad. Like, they are awful. I know they swept the Rays over the weekend, which is, I still don't even understand. Like, the Rays must just be so down bad this morning. But I don't think, even in spite of that little glimmer of hope that we got, that the White Sox are going to be winning more than, God, what is 50 wins maybe? Maybe 60 if things go well. I'd be pretty surprised if this team doesn't lose 100 games. But however you slice it, I think Eric Fetty is probably best case scenario about 8 or 9 wins. But that shouldn't stop you from having him. Like, Sonny Gray won 8 games last year, and he was a Cy Young finalist, one of the better fantasy baseball assets. It shouldn't just be about wins. I think if you look at the whole picture, the strikeouts being elevated in Korea and then continuing that here, the walks being a lot better than what we saw when he was a major leaguer before, 6.3% after he was always like a 10% guy. There's a lot of really good signs with Eric Fetty. Outside of the team context, like, that's the only real thing that would stop me. But even then, I added him in 10-team leagues. I added him in 15-team leagues yesterday. I think that across the board, he is worth it. And at 31% on Yahoo, I think he's still sitting out there in most of your leagues. Maybe not all of them. Definitely not all of them. But I think a good chunk of people aren't fully bought in, and a lot of that is likely the team context being as bad as it is. But I think that Eric Fetty does warrant a start in most cases. He will get St. Louis this week. I think it depends on your format. Like, in a 15-teamer, I'm starting him. In a 10-teamer, it's closer, but still probably at this point, I think he is in the circle of trust where I would start him against St. Louis. St. Louis has not been that great to start the year, to put it mildly. Their offense is like a bottom 6 or 7 offense in baseball, so I think you're pretty confident starting him. I wouldn't force it in the very shallow leagues, but I think in most cases, Eric Fetty is a pretty solid start for this week. Let's talk a little bit about Dane Dunning, because I feel like every year there is a stretch of a couple starts or a month, 6 weeks, even if it's just one start here and there, where Dane Dunning kind of gives me this impression that he could be very good. We don't see it sustained ever. It just, it doesn't happen with him. But, I mean, you see signs, and yesterday was one of those signs. 5 1/3 innings against the Reds, 1 earned run, allowed 3 hits, struck out 10 with no walks, and he had a 39% CSW to go along with a 26% swinging strike rate. I don't think he's anywhere near that good on a consistent basis, but I think there is, I think there is some streamer value here. He gets Kansas City next week. He's projected to face Kansas City, and I think that that's a pretty decent option. Kansas has been off to a nice start, but their offense is 98 WRC plus, 311 WOBA against righties. They don't really scare me off. You know, I think that they have the potential on a given night. You know, Bobby Witt could just go nuclear. Pasquantino could do things. Sal Perez, of course. Kansas City just doesn't really scare me on a night in and night out basis. I understand that they can put up crooked numbers, but, you know, unless we're talking about a really, really fringy streamer, I think that I'm pretty all right to use a lot of people against them. And Dane Dunning, he is somebody that I think is more in the good streamer category, especially when you got a matchup, Texas versus Kansas there. They're likely going to be favored. We've seen the strikeouts go through the roof this year. I don't think it'll stick to this extent, but he's gone from 19.4 up to 28.9% on the K rate, almost a 10% jump. I don't think it'll stick to that extent, but anything over what we saw last year, 19.4 is dreadful. He was well below a strikeout per inning. If we're seeing him even, you know, just at a strikeout per inning, a roughly a 9K per nine, which would be a regression off of what we've seen so far, but still an increase over years past, I think that you can actually get a lot of value out of him there. I wouldn't say he's must roster player or anything like that, but I do think that we're into the quote-unquote good streaming area with him, and I think in a matchup against Kansas City, that'd be something where I'd be pretty confident in using him for that. Let's talk about Andy Páez, Andy Pages, as some people are still calling him. And again, it looks like Pages, so you're not going to be faulted by me for calling him Andy Pages, but it is Páez. He's not getting nearly enough love. I watched a lot of him over the weekend. He was in Toronto facing my Jays, and it seems like every at-bat is a really competitive at-bat where he ends up putting loud contact on the ball. He's batting 302 through his first 43 at-bats, a couple homers, 5 ribbies. He scored 10 runs. He's playing every single day for the Dodgers in his 11 games up. He's hit safely in 8 of them, 4 multi-hit affairs. I think that he's a must-roster player across any format, everything, like literally everything, and he's only 27% rostered at the moment. I can't think of a format where you wouldn't want him outside of, you know, we talked last week, there was a couple people that had like 6-team leagues and 4-team league questions. Okay, in a 4-team league, maybe you're not adding Andy Páez. Everywhere else, pretty much, I think that he is worth consideration. He's slowly creeping up that Dodgers lineup. He was 7, 8, 9, and now the last couple of games, we've seen 6, 7, 6. It seems like he's never going to be in the top part of it, but you know, you creep up even 1 or 2 spots up there, it puts you in a better RBI position considering the power they have at the front of that lineup. There's a lot to really like about Páez. He's playing every single day for the Dodgers. That's pretty much all you need to see. But the fact that he's also contributing is a huge bonus as well. So I think at this point, he is an absolute must-roster player. Let's talk about Nick Senzel. This one is kind of wild, but he's hit 5 home runs in his last 21 at-bats. He hit 2 of them yesterday. He'd been battling an illness before. So if you just look at the game logs, it looks like a bit of an inconsistent playing time. But he had been sick. It looks like he'll play more going forward, especially because they had him batting second yesterday. You don't generally do that with players that you're not at least a little bit confident can remain in the lineup going forward. And not even just remain in the lineup, but be a fairly decent piece of your lineup. He'd been batting 6 through 9, getting him up to 2 and then hitting 2 home runs. I don't know what that's going to mean going forward, but it's definitely a good sign. Top prospect, 2nd overall pick. We've always had really high expectations for him. And I don't think that he's just suddenly that guy now. But he has the potential to still be a quality add in deeper leagues if you're given that kind of playing time, you got that raw power in there. I mean, last year it was 301 at-bats, 13 homers and 6 steals. That's not bad. It's not amazing, but it's something you can build off of, especially if you got more regular playing time. At this point, he's 5% rostered in Yahoo leagues. He's got third base and outfield eligibility. He's gone up 4% from yesterday. I don't expect this to be a situation where he just goes up to like 50, 60%. He won't. But I think that he is somebody, especially in your 15 teamers, that is well worth an add at this point. Let's move on and talk about Albert Suarez. Decent outing, despite the subpar results. 7 hits, 4 earned runs is not great. 6 strikeouts, only 1 walk over 4 innings is not bad, though. 33% CSW, 18% swinging strike rate, and he also threw 66% of his pitches for strikes. All really good signs. The Orioles are going to have a decision to make with John Means and Kyle Bradish coming back. I think that Suarez has earned a spot in the rotation. This is my opinion. I think that Suarez should be in the rotation. They should go with a 6-man going forward and just kind of play it like that. You get to preserve everybody's innings a little bit more. You have a lot of talent right now. I don't think there's really an obvious kick from the rotation. You know, you'd say maybe it's Cole Irvin, but Cole Irvin's actually been doing like really well recently. It might be Dean Kramer, but I think that they're pretty confident in Dean Kramer at the same time. Like, I think Dean Kramer probably should be the odd man out. Will he be? I wouldn't expect that to happen. He's really not that great, but they seem to like him. I don't know what the plan is exactly. We'll have to see what happens with. They said Kyle Bradish's next start will be at the big league level, and I think John Means has one more rehab start. I'd hold Suarez for now. I know a lot of people dropped him last night preemptively, and there's a decent chance that that's the right move, that he gets sent back to the pen. But I would just hold off for now until we have a better idea of their plans in Baltimore, because they might end up sticking with him, and he's been really good so far. I know that this is not what you wanted to see yesterday, especially for a Sunday stream in a head-to-head, but I think he's a lot better than that 4 earned runs, 7 hits against Oakland would suggest, too. Let's talk about Jared Jones. First time I've mentioned him in a quick hits where he was not leading off. He's always at the top of the quick hits because I generally try to lead with a great performance. And most of the time when Jared Jones is out there, there's nobody better to talk about. This was the first quote-unquote bad outing of his career, and it was 3 earned runs over 5 innings. He did not have his sharp stuff. He allowed 6 hits, 1 walk, 22% CSW, and only an 8.4 swinging strike rate. Most of the problems were during the third inning where he allowed back-to-back home runs. I saw Tyro Estrada hit a home run, and you guys know that's my guy. I was so happy, and then I was like, oh, my God, it's off of Jared Jones. So bittersweet, but obviously we'll take that here in Tyro land because we love him. I'm really not worried. There's something that I saw pointed out by Nick Pollock this morning on Twitter, that his fastball velocity did decline a little bit in the start, and he was only at like 90, I think 94, 93, closer to the end of the start where he's usually like 97, 98. I don't know, guys. I don't know. I'm not going to say it. It's not good, but there's nothing really to worry about at this point just because of that. I'm not going to read too much into it. At this point, I think just for our own sanity, we can't do that. I mean, you can, and you can say, yep, it's probably an elbow problem. It's probably done for the year. Like, I just can't do it anymore. From that perspective, I've done that, the pessimistic point of view with so many of these players. Most of the time, it's been correct, but I think it's just, you know, a couple miles off, end of the outing. This is not something that I'm going to be panicking about yet for Jared Jones. The thing that is actually wild to me is the fact that he's not more rostered than he is. He's 84% on Yahoo. 84%. There's no way that 16% of leagues are just not paying attention anymore. Because I do see players get added all the time that get shot up into the 90% kind of range. And it's like, why is Jared Jones not getting that love exactly? Like Spencer Turnbull went up to 70%+. That's the first example here that came to my thing. Seth Lugo went up over 70%. You'd figure with Jared Jones and the talent that we have there with him, he would be somebody that would shoot up. Oh, here's another example. Ronaldo Lopez shot up ahead of Jared Jones. Like, I just don't understand why people are not going out of their way to do anything they can to add Jones if he's still sitting out there. There are actually some people who dropped him after yesterday's start, which I find to be kind of funny at this point. It was 504 people have dropped him today. If you're seeing him get put on waiver wires, then absolutely go ahead and pick him up at this point. I'm not really that worried. Could it be something more ominous? Maybe. Nothing pointing to that at this point. So if Jared Jones is a free agent in your league, go and see if he's out there. Let's talk Keaton Wynn. Very, very sharp stretch for him recently. He went 6 innings yesterday, 1 earned run with 5 strikeouts and 1 walk, 25% CSW and a 10% swinging strike rate. That's 3 consecutive outings with a victory, 6 innings pitched and 1 earned run allowed. 28% on Yahoo, and I do think that he is worth a pickup in most cases. 29%, he's shot up 1% today. pretty much every case, I would be adding him, but I think he's likely a sit this week against Philadelphia. That's a tough matchup, team that's doing well. I don't know that I'd want to put him into that environment. I think the prudent move would be to sit him for this week. But I think Keaton Wynn is definitely worth an add in pretty much every format at this point. He's looked really, really good, and I think most of us are kind of desperate for some starting pitcher help. Let's talk about Jacob Young. He's been really, really good, and I picked him up in a lot of places last night. He's batting .333. 14 runs, 7 ribbies, and 10 stolen bases. He's almost always batting 9th for the Nationals, which it does limit your value. But I think in deeper leagues, which is mostly where I was adding him, he does warrant a pickup at this point based on what he's been doing for you. He is, at this point, 11% roster, Jacob Young. 11%. It just feels a little bit low. He was 2% last night, so people are starting to pick him up. Those steals, the regular playing time, I think if you're in any kind of situation where you need speed, he's a really good pickup. Maybe the best pickup right now, considering he's playing every day. Stolen multiple bases in each of the last two games for you. I think that we're looking at somebody who, as long as the playing time remains consistent, and I do think that there's no reason for him to come out. Like, he's going to be playing, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. He's going to be playing pretty much every day. There's no reason for him to sit. Should be a 35, 40 stolen base guy. At this point, things can change. The Nationals are not a team where you can ever get too sure of what they're going to do. Luis Garcia got sent down last year, and I was really surprised by that. I'm kind of surprised that James Wood has not been called up at this point still. Some prospect people are not as surprised by that, but I think that generally Washington does some things that are a little bit weird, kind of hard to predict. So I don't know exactly what the plan is with Jacob Young, but I think at this point, he's a really strong ad, and I personally picked him up myself in, I think, 4 leagues yesterday. So I'm in. I'm in at this point. I think, especially if you need speed, he's probably the best option out there. Let's talk Bryson Stott. I loved this one. So he was dropped all over the place. People were – and I was not dropping him myself, but I was really pissed off last week. He was sitting back-to-back days against lefties. It looked like he was entering into a platoon. I was pissed. And he fell down to 77% on Yahoo. Yesterday, he had 2 home runs, drove in 4, stole a base as well. And now all of a sudden, he's got 3 homers, 4 steals, 12 runs, 14 ribbies, and you're looking at like a top 200 player again. Again, I've said this a million times recently. It's still way too early to know what anybody is really going to be this year, especially when that guy was as good as Bryson Stott was and people immediately gave up. That was a bad idea because he was a 15 homer, 30 steal, .280 batting average guy in a great lineup. Got off to a cold stretch, and then people gave up so soon. I understand it was frustrating. Trust me, I have Bryson Stott on like 5 of my teams, 5 or 6 out of my 14 teams this year. So trust me when I say I felt that frustration too. But to cut him is just to add insult to injury, and then you're just missing out on days like this, and you're missing out on the next 5 months. So if Bryson Stott is out there, and he is out there in some leagues, 78% rostered, I would be doing what I can to go and add him. Top priority, throw a bunch of fab at him if you need to. He is somebody that needs to be on every single roster. I think it's ridiculous that anybody cut him already. I understand. Well, I shouldn't say that because the strong side platoon shit of the last week might have pushed a couple people over the edge. But still, I think it's just way too early to give up on a guy where you spent a top 100 pick on him, or at worst, the top 110 pick, and who delivered an amazing season last year. Let's talk Brandon Pfaadt. By far had his best start of the season yesterday against the Mariners. 11 strikeouts with 2 earned runs over 6 innings, did not walk a batter. 38% CSW, and he had a 17.7% swinging strike rate. Couple of shaky outings against St. Louis and Atlanta, but outside of that, he's been really excellent this year. Up over 70% on Yahoo, but I think he's warranting an ad pretty much in every single league, even if you're still seeing him out there in shallow formats. I think that he is worth an ad. That being said, I have a few Brandon Pfaadt shares myself this year, and I'm putting him on the bench this week against the Padres. I think it's just a little bit too tricky of a matchup for me. He's not fully in that circle of trust where I'm putting him out there against a tough offense. So I left him on the bench, and I think that that's probably the wise thing to do, but I can understand it as well. You want to bank that momentum off a really good start, and maybe he can keep it going. I understand, but I think the wise move with Brandon Pfaadt, considering he can be a little bit inconsistent, would be to bench him for this week. All right, let's get into the most added and dropped players of the day. Number one with a bullet is Bailey Falter. I don't think that Bailey Falter is that great. I think he's had a really good run recently, but he gets one of the better two-start weeks we're going to see this year, Oakland and Colorado. Colorado away from Coors and at Oakland. It's really about as good as you can get. Now, I picked him up myself in Tout Wars and in a couple other places. I think I picked him up in three leagues last night. I think that he is more suited, though, for like 12-team and deeper leagues. And you could maybe even argue 15-team leagues because the skills are not that great with Bailey Falter. Like, the matchup is pretty much the only reason to be adding him at this point. It's not about – I think he's turned a corner, and I think he's going to be a lot better. Like, he's still striking out less than 20% of batters. I don't think he's really that great. He has a 456 xFIP. He's just not that great. But these matchups are about as appealing as you can possibly get, especially in a 15-team league. That is the sweet spot for Bailey Falter, and specifically if you're in weekly lineup leagues. In daily leagues, you get to pick and choose here and there. You know, you probably got 5-6 ads for the week. You can play around a little bit and stream a couple of good pitchers, even if it's just one day guys here and there. I think where he is really, truly valuable is in those weekly lineup settings where you're getting those two great matchups and you're thinking, okay, I might get two wins. I might get 11 innings pitched here with, like, you know, 7 or 8 strikeouts, hopefully good ratios. If it's daily, I can understand it, and I still think he's probably worth it against Oakland tonight, but I don't think that he is somebody that gives me nearly as much comfort in a daily league as he would in a deeper weekly league at this point. So I think he's fine. Even, like, 12s and deeper, though, is really where I want to be targeting him, and specifically 15s. Like, if it's a 10-team league, I just can't really get behind it. I think unless you're talking a really deep 10-teamer, I think standard 10-teamers, you can probably leave him alone. Joey Lopefito was called up by the Astros. I'm not sure if they've actually officially made the move yet. If they haven't, this is going to be something that does get done today. He's been really, really good in the minor leagues. 13 home runs this season with 5 steals across 25 games. He's hitting .287 despite a 30% strikeout rate. I worry a little bit about, well, first of all, like, what's the playing time going to be? Is he going to be just like a replacement for Jose Abreu? I have heard people say that. They think that Abreu is just done and they're going to put Lopefito at first base. That's a possibility. I'm not 100% sure how it's going to break out. I think that you can add him if you like, but I'm at the point where I'm just not really so interested in these prospects that have been coming up this year. It's a very case-by-case basis, and you can't paint the whole year with the same brush, but been kind of a disappointing year for prospects, for guys who are even in like their second year trying to build off of rookie seasons. It hasn't been that great. Lopefito is going to be coming up into a good lineup. There's good power speed combo there, which is great for fantasy. I just don't know if he's going to play enough to make it worth your while. And I don't know that the production, even if he is playing, is going to be what you're hoping for. Between, you know, Hess and Kierstad coming up and playing one day out of 5. You know, the guys like Jordan Walker, who were struggling so much that they got sent down. Jackson Holliday, Wyatt Langford not doing so. I mean, Langford much better than Holliday. But generally, we haven't seen an amazing rookie class this year. I shouldn't paint everybody with the same brush. There's a chance Lopefito comes up and he's great. And I think you can, like, you know, again, speculative ad. Drop your worst player on the bench for him. It's not going to hurt you necessarily. I just don't know that the upside is going to be as high as what a lot of people are thinking. With a lot of these prospects, they're thinking, and I was kind of guilty of it myself with Wyatt Langford, that you're thinking they're going to come up immediately and just be like 25 and 25. And I think this is because of what we saw over the last couple of years with Julio, Bobby Witt, Corbin Carroll, et cetera. We just think everybody comes up and they get it right away. A lot of the times they don't, and a lot of times the situation is not there for them to succeed right away. So I think you can pick them up. But honestly, it's like the same thing I said about Heston Kierstad. Pick him up, keep your expectations in check, and don't get too attached because there might be a point where you're dropping him in the near future. Jameson Taillon is also being added up in quite a few leagues today. I don't mind it at all. He's going to be having a 2-start week, it looks like, against the Mets and the Brewers. I usually, the last couple of years, I've been a lot more on the ball about this, but talking about 2-start weeks, don't ever be 100% certain that a guy is going to get 2 starts. If they're starting on Monday and it's a 7-day week for the team, then you can be a lot more confident. If it's a Tuesday start where they're projected for another one on Sunday, that's where you can get really, really tricky and it doesn't always end up working out for you. But it looks like we're getting 2 Jameson Taillon starts. He will start on Monday. That point is more just in general, not about him. Looks like we're getting Mets and Brewers. I don't know that I love that so much. The Brewers have been great. The Mets have a lot of scary pieces. And Taillon, even though he's had a good couple starts so far this year, I just don't think that he's somebody who's that great. He's, you know, for his career, he's been fine in and out of being a startable fantasy asset and not startable. It's a 2-start week, 15-teamers. I can get behind it for sure. But in 12 team and shallower, I just don't really have much interest in Jameson Taillon. I don't think that there's a lot of upside. I don't think that the strikeouts are that great. I really don't think that there's a lot going for him. So I think in most cases, most shallow formats, you guys can leave him on the bench. Or you can leave him on waiver wires, in all honesty, I think, in a lot of cases. Let's talk about Anthony Rizzo, because he has been the number one fantasy player over the last week, and he has been added in 12% of leagues today. 11 for 27 with 4 homers, 8 runs, and 7 ribbies over the last week. This is why we were buying in really, really late, hoping that this would happen. It didn't happen to start the year. It looked pretty bad. But he, over the last week, has obviously really turned it around. I'm starting him over Spencer Torkelson in a league this week. I just think that Rizzo seems like he is starting to figure things out here. I think the talent is still there. I know the ballpark is really good for left-handed hitters. There's a lot to like about Anthony Rizzo. Not to say that I'd necessarily drop Torkelson for Rizzo. This is a league where I had them both rostered. But Rizzo would be the guy I'd prefer to start if that's like, I know nobody's asking that question, but between the two of them, I think Rizzo is the better option right now. The concussion stuff really worried me, but he seems healthy. He's playing every day. He's producing. I don't have any problem with picking up Rizzo here. A lot of people need first base help. I know that I'm starting Mark Canha in a 10-teamer, in a deep 10-teamer right now because I lost Cassis. I didn't plan properly to have a backup first baseman, and it's not been good. It's really not been good. So if you're able to find Anthony Rizzo, there's some people who might be absolutely jumping all over that. Let's talk about Ryan Jeffers. Ryan Jeffers, I think, is potentially like a top 5 or 7 catcher for the season going forward. I don't know that it's necessarily, like, it's not set in stone or anything, but from what we've seen so far, the way that they're batting him in the top third of the order, he's playing pretty much, I mean, not every single day, but he's playing like 5-6 days a week. I mean, I think that he is worth adding pretty much everywhere. 48% rostered, 1-catcher leagues at this point should be, like, 2-catcher leagues, he's already been rostered, so there's no real move there. But even in your 1-catcher leagues, a lot of you are probably worrying about, you know, Alejandro Kirk actually had a good day, a good game the other day, so he might not be the obvious choice to drop. But a lot of you guys might be, you know, going with Langoliers, or maybe it's Joey Bart or Ivan Herrera. You know, there's a lot of options, I think, in shallow leagues where there's a lot of bad catchers that are still being rostered, it looks like, in a lot of 12-teamers. Mitch Garver is another one. Mitch Garver has looked dreadful. A lot of people are still rostering him. I think that you can pretty easily cut him. Henry Davis is another one. There's a lot of players I think you could pretty happily be cutting for Ryan Jeffers if you're still seeing him out there. That's a move that I would absolutely be making. Another very popular ad today and over the last few days has been Joe Adell. Joe Adell, to this point, has 10 runs, 10 ribbies, 3 homers, and 5 stolen bases in just 49 at-bats. That's not what we were expecting, not what I was expecting from Joe Adell. It seems like every time he's come up and had a cup of coffee in the big leagues, it's been awful, massive strikeout rates, not really doing anything for you and getting sent back down. This is the 5th year in a row where he's been called up. So I don't think there were a lot of people who were really that interested. I see there are some people who had like draft champion shares, draft and hold leagues where you took a chance on him, but I don't know that I heard many people really touting Joe Adell this year. There was no reason to. It looked like he was cooked. Last year, he got a chance at the big leagues for the 4th consecutive season. He was striking out 40% of the time, and it just looked like, okay, Joe Adell's kind of done. But this year, through his first 21 games, he's doing very well. Like I said, 3 homers, 5 steals. He's cut the strikeouts down to just 23%. Now, he's rocking a .382 BABIP. It won't always be that good, and I think that we're going to have to expect that he's going to come back down to earth here. Like, this is not just, oh, Joe Adell's broken out now. Now he's an MVP-level player, 174 WRC+. No, nobody, I don't think, is expecting that. But I think that there's maybe a chance he can be a somewhat productive big league player. If you just look at rest of season projections from the bat, from ATC, from the various different sources on Fangraphs, it's about 16 homers and 8 stolen bases. If you're getting 16 homers and 8 stolen bases over the next 5 months from a player, I think that you'd likely sign up for that. If you're just not looking at the name and you're saying there's a guy you can pick up off the waiver wire and he's projected to give you 16 homers, 8 stolen bases, and bat about .230 to .240. I think that most people are probably going to be okay with that. Now, is he going to live up to that? I don't know, because Joe Adell has occasionally tricked us in the past with these little hot streaks, and we know whenever he gets sent down to AAA that it looks really good. So I'm not willing to jump in with both feet. I didn't actually get him anywhere last night. I put a couple of low bids in on him just to keep him honest in case people are letting him slide by for a few bucks. But I just don't really have much reason to believe that he is just now all of a sudden fixed. Maybe he is. But excuse me, but this is the fifth year of him now trying to be a major league player. Maybe it was too soon to call him up in 2020. Maybe you can say the same about 2021. But it's just been bad for so long that maybe we're just kind of broken with Joe Adell, a lot of us. And maybe that's why he's still only 14% rostered, because a lot of people are like, well, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, kind of thing. I think if you have a free spot at the end of your bench, then you can go ahead and add him. It's not anything that I would, you know, strongly advise against or anything. Like, it's fine. But just don't expect that you're now getting this fully formed version of Adell that's going to be another Trout or another Ohtani. Like, I don't think anybody's really expecting that. But the hype around him was rather massive coming up. There are some people who will fully dive into this and say, this is it now. Joe Adell is here. 30-30 season or whatever. I'm not seeing it. If you want to add him and take a chance, that's fine. But just keep your expectations in check, because I don't think this is going to end terribly well. But let's talk about Yennier Cano. And we're going to talk about him because Craig Kimbrel yesterday, well, first of all, the last couple of games, Craig Kimbrel has looked pretty bad. He's blown a couple consecutive saves. And on top of that, he's managing back tightness, according to Brandon Hyde. So I think there is some room here for a Yennier Cano add and stash. I don't know that it's necessary immediately, because I don't know that Kimbrel's in any real danger of losing his job or anything like that. But I think Cano is the guy that they would turn to if you have space on your bench and maybe you are the Kimbrel owner in your league and you're worried about losing a closer. I think it's a prudent move to add Cano just as a backup plan. I don't know that he's going to be somebody you can even start right now. You probably could, honestly, in some leagues. It's not a situation where he's going to hurt you. He's just probably at this point only going to give you maybe like 3, 4, 5 innings. Last week, if he gives you that every week, you'd be probably okay with it. Five innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 earned run. That's fine from Cano. But generally, you can just add him up now. In specifically, like, I'm not saying in the most shallow leagues, like 12 and deeper, specifically 15s, I think is a good place to be looking at Cano in case Kimbrel has to miss some time. If it's a 10-teamer, even 12-teamer, I think there are generally some decent options out there. But I think in those 15s, like, that's where you need to be ahead of the curve a little bit. And I think a lot of people were putting in some small bids on Cano last night just in case there is anything really wrong with Kimbrel. I got a bunch of Cano in draft and hold leagues, so I'll slot him in there, not for this week, but maybe next week if something has to happen. But at this point, I think he's a decent stash in case what's happening with Kimbrel is a little more serious than we are anticipating. Let's talk about the drops. Number one with a bullet is Albert Suarez. We mentioned him earlier. I don't think that I am ready to drop him, like I said. 10,000 people dropped him, which seems like a crazy high number. I do get it, but I think I would give him a little more time as well. Ryan Weathers has completely fallen off the track here these last couple of games. Not striking batters out. I mean, Atlanta was a tough matchup, but yesterday against Washington is not what you want to see. 6 runs on 5 hits with 3 walks. Bad stuff. Shallow formats where he is getting dropped right now, absolutely. No reason to hold on to him. Paul Blackburn is an interesting one. I don't know that he's a must hold or anything, but he does have a great matchup against Miami this week. And if you want to use him there, I think that it's probably not going to hurt you. Miami is just so incompetent offensively. I think that Paul Blackburn would be a pretty decent add slash stream for that. Bryce Elder is getting dropped all over the place. He put up a pretty decent two-step. God bless him. We figured this might happen. He's not a great pitcher. He's just not. And he got lucky facing Miami, who stinks, and Cleveland. He got by 5 1/3 of just allowing a couple of runs with 4 walks, I might add, and only 2 strikeouts. But he got by. It didn't kill you. 12 innings, a 150 ERA, a 133 whip, and he gave you the victory. You'll take it. Now he gets the Dodgers on the weekend. I don't think I need to spell this out because you guys know how I feel about Bryce Elder, but easily dropping him, not adding him, not even coming close to adding him. I can't even believe that he is on 41% of rosters on Yahoo. I think it's crazy, but he's still that rostered. Mitchell Parker is being dropped quite a bit. He was one of my favorite ads last week. It didn't work out so well. It was 4 innings, 1 run ball, two strikeouts, walked a couple batters. It wasn't great. He faces Texas this week. It's a tricky start. In the leagues where I had him, I dropped him in a 10-teamer, and then in a 15-teamer, I benched him. So I think that's probably the wise move for now. I mean, he's been pretty good. His first 16 innings, you're only looking at a couple runs allowed, 14 strikeouts. He's won a couple of those games. I think he's a decent enough asset where in 15s you hold, and in shallower formats, I think it's all right to let him go. And Heston Kjerstad is also among the most dropped players. Absolutely, drop it like it's hot. He is doing nothing for you. He's not playing. He's had 5 at-bats since he's been called up a week ago. There's nothing you can do there if he's not playing, and this is why we worry in general about the Loperfidos of the world and any prospect, really, specifically for Baltimore, because they're a little weird and stupid with how they do these things. But at this point, Kjerstad has to be dropped and sent back to waivers. Guys, that will do it, though. We'll be back again tomorrow. If you got anything for me, send it over to JoeOrico99 on Twitter and also at EthosFantasyBB. Guys, sportsethos.com is the website. Be sure to check it out. But we will be back again tomorrow talking about Monday's news and notes. The most added players will do this all again, talk about any of the big news. But until then, everybody, enjoy baseball and have a great night.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.